Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Speaking with Ann Standbeck, she's president of Love Makes a Family here in Connecticut. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you, Jake. Glad to be with you.
Now, what we're talking about today is your campaign, the Love Makes a Family campaign, for legal recognition for same-sex couples. But actually, Love Makes a Family started with a different set of agenda issues last year or the year before. Can you tell us what you were fighting when you first got formed?
Certainly. Love Makes a Family started a little over a year ago, particularly around the issue of second parent adoption for same-sex couples. Your listeners might be aware that there was a Connecticut Supreme Court case referred to as the Baby Z case. There was a decision by the court that said that while they understood the issues in that particular case and in fact felt it would be in the best interest of the child, Baby Z, to allow his other mother to legally adopt him, that unfortunately the Connecticut adoption laws were so restrictive that they didn't feel that they could do it at the court level. But they sent it, in essence, back to the legislature to ask them to fix the problem. And that was what our battle was. And we got parents, both same-sex and opposite-sex, to talk to legislators. And we were successful in passing that bill last session.
Great. And domestic partnership was part of that as well?
Yes, we actually had three goals. One was the second parent adoption bill, and that was in some ways the largest goal. But there was also a union arbitration bill for state employees that needed to be approved by the legislature that would allow them to get some domestic partnership benefits, particularly health care and pension benefits. And so we had that as part of our family law agenda. That passed as well. The third goal we had was to defeat the so-called Defense of Marriage Amendment, also known as a DOMA. That is legislation that would put into law that marriage only exists between a man and a woman. And we were able, unlike most states, to actually defeat it on a roll call vote. So we had a very successful first year.
That's great. And Connecticut's a relatively liberal state for these issues.
We are. We have a history of religious freedom from back in colonial days. And we also have things from the mid-60s that helped to clarify privacy rights. The Griswold decision that is the basis for the Roe v. Wade decision came right here from Connecticut. So we have generally progressive privacy laws. And we also have a long and strong history of supporting lesbian, gay, bisexual civil rights and in this past year, transgender civil rights as well. We passed a broad-based civil rights law in 1991. We're one of the first states in the country to do that, prohibiting discrimination in housing, in employment, in credit, and in public accommodations. And we also were one of the first states to include sexual orientation in our hate crimes laws. So we do have a very proud history of supporting queer civil rights.
Let's do a little historical work on where we are as a nation, because there was a big hullabaloo over the last couple of years with Hawaii. What happened in Hawaii?
Hawaii, I think, is the state where we all got our hopes up that we would be getting married a few years ago. They had a case that went to their Supreme Court. The Supreme Court had a positive ruling but sent it back to the lower court level. This gets very confusing in this back and forth. But what ultimately happened, unfortunately, is before the Supreme Court was able to give a final ruling on the issue, the legislature passed a resolution for that basically said that marriage was not to be allowed in the state of Hawaii. They ended up passing a domestic partnership law, but it was a big disappointment for many in the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm. And then Vermont's Supreme Court also got in the act.
Vermont's Supreme Court was sort of percolating along behind the scenes while Hawaii was out front. Alaska actually was in there, too. Unfortunately, they had a similar public referendum that did not come out in our favor. But Vermont had three couples who filed a suit at the lower court level to apply for a marriage license. It ended up winding its way up to the Vermont Supreme Court, and it was last year that we got this wonderful ruling from Vermont, saying that marriage was a fundamental right, and that it was part of our shared humanity that right be extended to same-sex couples. They also, like the Connecticut Supreme Court in our Baby Z case, they did not take that one final step and say that same-sex couples could get married in Vermont. They, too, sent it back to the legislature, and the legislature was told to craft a solution that would provide equity for same-sex couples. It might be marriage, and it might be some parallel institution. And what the Vermont legislature ultimately decided to do was to create that parallel structure, which they called a civil union. And a lot of people have misconceptions about what civil union is.
Yeah, let's unpack those terms.
Yeah. In essence, they have gone through their statutes, and anywhere the word husband or wife or spouse appears, they have added in or partnered to a civil union. So it follows just exactly the marriage, the rights and responsibilities of marriage in the state of Vermont. This is the first time in our country's history that there has been this legal recognition. So that is a momentous, groundbreaking first step. Unfortunately, they didn't go that final step towards real equality, in my mind, which is the right to marry. So as long as the couple stays in Vermont, they go through the Vermont, you know, they file a joint state income tax return. We'll talk about the federal issues in a minute. If they split up, they go through the Vermont divorce courts as a heterosexual couple would. The problem is, if they decided they wanted to move to Connecticut, their civil union would no longer be recognized. If they took a vacation to Florida and one of the partners was in an automobile accident and ended up in the hospital, that non-injured partner would have no legal right to make healthcare decisions for their life partner, to visit them in the hospital, and if there were other issues involved, they would have no rights in that regard. So it's a great first step, but it does not allow the complete rights and responsibilities that come with civil marriage.
I'm speaking with Ann Standbeck. She's the president of Love Makes a Family here in Connecticut, and it's an organization that's working this year for legal recognition for same-sex couples. So we're going to, in this coming legislative session, your goal is to pass, ideally, a legal recognition for same-sex couples, but is that politically feasible? Have our allies in the state legislature given an indication that that is a workable goal, or would they recommend that we pursue civil union or some other expanded domestic partnership?
I think we're still waiting to hear back from them as to where they are. Once we decided that we were going to move forward with this next step in the struggle for civil rights, we set up grassroots structures around the state. And the most important thing that we've done in the past several months and will do for the next few months is to have constituents meet with their legislators, be they single or coupled, gay or straight. The legislators need to hear from real people that this is important legislation. So we know already from the legislators that we've talked to that it's a new issue. For some of them, they've been supportive of gay rights in the past, but this is a little new. It's a little scary. Some of them have heard what has happened in Vermont.
The backlash in Vermont included the governor almost getting defeated, right? And or the governor did get defeated?
No. The governor kept his seat, and the Senate remained a pro civil union Senate. They did lose the House, and that was a disappointment. I will say, in terms of Vermont, that the whole Take Back Vermont backlash, as they called it, had to do with a lot of issues. It wasn't just the same-sex marriage or the civil union issue. They really saw it as an issue between, quote, native Vermonters and the flatlanders who had moved into their state.
Bringing all kinds of alien values, including gay rights advocacy.
Exactly. Those kind of, and better schools and property tax reform, all those alien values.
Vermont's such a weird state because they got Bernie Sanders up there and a really progressive community as well.
They do. And they took an exit poll in the November elections, and it was a slight majority, but it was a majority of the voters favored civil union. So we heard a lot after that election, and I think legislators got scared. But the reality is a majority of voters in the state still supported the rights of same-sex couples to be legally recognized.
Would you think it's fair to say that straight liberal legislators would prefer that this issue not be pressed? Because in the polling that I've seen nationally, a large majority of Americans are opposed to legal recognition of same-sex couples or the any equivalency between gay marriage and straight marriage. Although pressed on the particulars, they see a majority of Americans seem to be in favor of particular civil rights protections or anti-discrimination protections. But the idea of gay marriage itself is just such a red flag for the typical person out there. So it seems like for liberals, this would be a real scary third rail to touch.
I think you're right. I think it is a scary third rail. I think a lot of that, again, goes back to the fact that people haven't thought about it. They haven't been educated about it. We hear a couple of common refrains when we speak with legislators who aren't supportive yet. One of those is marriage is a religious institution. It is something that that is sacred that we can't touch. And of course, the reality is marriage is a sacrament in certain religious traditions and an important part of most religious traditions. We're talking about civil marriage. We have no desire to do anything with the religious component of marriage. But it, in fact, is our government that confers the over 300 rights and responsibilities just in the state of Connecticut alone to those who marry.
That's an interesting point, because there is a parallel struggle going on in many religious institutions to win the right for liberal clergy to ordain and sacralize gay marriages. And that struggle is a separate and distinct struggle from the one to have a legal recognition, although probably the same folks are often involved.
Probably the same folks involved, but it's important that the congregants in those particular religious faiths be involved in the struggle within their faith. But that's not about civil marriage. One of the attorneys on the national level, Evan Wolfson, who works for Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund, pointed out quite rightly that there is a particular religion, very prevalent in the state of Connecticut, that does not believe that people can divorce and remarry. Now, legislators would never think that that particular religious tenet should become the law of the land in Connecticut. And yet they very easily go to, well, the Catholic Church opposes marriage for same-sex couples, so how can we possibly feel any differently? The reality is that religions speak with a variety of voices on this issue, and there is not a unified voice. And it's important that we listen to all those faith traditions, but understand that we are discussing civil marriage, and religious marriage is a whole thing altogether. Another common refrain and misconception that we hear from people who oppose marriage for same-sex couples. Is it marriage? Is this traditional, static, never-changing institution? And anyone who remembers their history remembers that women, their rights within marriage 100 years ago were almost zero. Two people, a man and a woman, joined together and became married, and they became one, and the one was the husband. A woman gave up her right to own property. She gave up a right to have custody of her children. She gave up a right to sue individually. And through the decades, those things have changed. That was an incredibly radical change when it was going on. At the same time, slaves were not allowed to marry because they were considered property. They did not have the right to consent. And eventually, with the abolition of slavery, slaves rushed to get married because they saw it, or former slaves rushed to get married because they saw it as a civil rights freedom and civil rights issue. And I think people may remember that it was only in 1967 that, in the Loving versus Virginia U.S. Supreme Court decision, that our government said that laws prohibiting marriage between races was unconstitutional. Again, a very radical change in the institution of marriage that is hard to fathom today, and yet 30 years ago, 40 years ago, was a very, very controversial thing. So marriage has always changed, and like the important institutions of our society, it has to change to remain relevant. And we believe that as it changes, it will get stronger. And by adding inclusion, we're going to bring strength to the institution of marriage that aren't there right now.
Speaking with Ann Stanbeck, she's president of Love Makes a Family. Now, I don't want to take you to a third rail, perhaps in your politics, but I've been following with great interest, and I've interviewed for the show folks in the polyamory movement, and that's the movement of folks who believe in expanding our ideas of couples to three or more people. And there is a kind of parallel set of issues going on with the polygamy struggle out in Utah. And what all of these struggles bring to mind to me is that perhaps we should get the government out of the business of sacralizing these unions altogether, of legally recognizing dyadic couples altogether, and perhaps extend our civil union struggle to the concept of having contractual obligations that we voluntarily contractually enter into, and that it spell out what exactly we're committing to one another. And in some ways, I think it would be a real boon to marriage if people, before they started to live together, they said, well, here's exactly what goes in, what's involved in this contract of living together, instead of just leaving it up to some kind of generalized understanding of what a marriage is.
Well, I can't really speak with a great deal of familiarity about the polyamory struggle, but I think you really hit the nail on the head when you say that we need to have a better sense of what are these rights and responsibilities that we are signing onto and signing away when people get married. I am amazed at the heterosexual couples I know when I began finding out the rights and responsibilities of 300 plus that exist in Connecticut. My friends had no idea that all those things came automatically with the institution of marriage. And some people will say, well, yes, you can contract. You know, a lesbian couple can go to a lawyer and contract on many of those rights. That's true, and I think if you are aware enough about the rights that you aren't entitled to, you might go there. It costs hundreds of dollars to go to a lawyer and get those papers drawn up. It's something that heterosexual couples get automatically when they are married. In addition, my partner and I drew up papers, but it's only a handful of the rights and responsibilities that come with marriage.
Plus, so, it's a kind of a psychological burden. It's like the issue of prenuptial agreements that, you know, to sit down with your partner and say, now, if we ever get divorced, you're not going to take all my money, are you? You know, to have to do that between you and I, when other people don't have to do that, it puts a kind of special burden on us. And I can imagine that deciding exactly what things you would put into your contract would be quite difficult.
It is difficult, and it does, I think, it is a psychological burden. That's a very good point. Unfortunately, there are not that many things that you are allowed to put into it. So at a certain level, it's not that difficult.
Right. Yeah. Now, we're in the Bush-Ashcroft era. We don't expect this legislature at the national level, the Republican Congress, to change their mind on DOMA at all, right? And Bush-Ashcroft is not going to pursue rights for federal employees the way that Gore might have. So are there special considerations? Is this a state-by-state struggle until we get a more favorable federal climate?
I think it is. You talked about DOMA. Your listeners might not know that the first DOMA was actually a federal DOMA. That's where the term came from. So we have that in Connecticut. We only had one of our congresspeople who voted against that, which would be a pro-gay vote, and that was Sam Gaydenson, who, of course, isn't in office any longer. The federal level looks pretty bleak at this point.
Yeah.
And yet we've got to continue with this state-by-state struggle, because only after we have a marriage law in one of the states will we be able to effectively challenge the federal DOMA and its constitutionality.
Now, state DOMAs can be challenged as violating the federal constitution because of the full faith and credit clause, that you have to, if someone enters into a contract in one state, it has to be recognized by another state and so on. But the congressional DOMA legislation, did that nullify that full faith and credit obligation of states to recognize marriages and other, from other states?
That is what it is attempting to do. Most legal experts that we have talked to believe that it is unconstitutional, but it will sit there causing us trouble until a case is brought forth.
Uh-huh. It hasn't been brought to the Supreme Court yet.
No, it hasn't. And frankly, I'm not sure that this is the Supreme Court it should be brought to. And unfortunately, it looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Right. Now, I want to, just in the time that we have left, I want to go back a little bit with this issue, because the struggle for gay rights, for queer recognition in the United States has gone through a lot of different political trends. And in the early, in the 60s and the 70s, in the early period, there was a kind of a close relationship between the gay rights movement and the feminist movement, and a real critical attitude towards marriage. And it seems like the gay rights politics is a real sea change in terms of people not having as much of a full-throated countercultural attitude towards the domestic institutions of bourgeois life, but rather embracing those and saying, we want a piece of that pie too. I mean, is there still debate in gay political circles about whether this is a sellout to of the fundamental values of having a queer society?
I think that there has been a sea change, some of that has been just a philosophical shift, but some of it has been a recognition that this isn't about, you know, getting a piece of the pie, bourgeois values, that it is much more about basic equality. And while it's true that certain things, you and I may not believe that health insurance, for instance, should be tied to marriage any more than it should be tied to employment, the reality is, if you have made a life commitment with another person, and you have said, I am going to be responsible for you, that to have that health care benefit, to have, this is a new one that we just, our lawyers just discovered, there's a Patient's Bill of Rights in Connecticut, and it guarantees that if you are a married spouse, and your spouse is in a nursing home, that you have a guaranteed right to private visitations with that spouse. If you're both in that nursing home together, you are guaranteed to have a room together, a private room. Just some of these things that it's not about, you know, selling out to capitalism. It's about living with dignity and being able to take care of our loved ones.
And how can people hook up with the LMF struggle here in Connecticut and help you advance the cause of legal recognition for same-sex couples?
They can do that by calling one of two phone numbers, if I could give you those. One is 860-676-9635, and the other is 860-247-4322. Call either of those numbers, we can hook you up with the chapter in your geographical part of the state. If you want to get involved at any level, we can tell you how to do that. If you just would like to make a single phone call to your legislator, that will make a tremendous difference, and we really need the help of everybody out there.
There isn't a particular piece of legislation yet that they would be talking about, but just this on this topic.
In mid-March, we will be holding a public hearing before the Judiciary Committee where we will talk broadly about the issue. The other side will be there, too, talking against it. But there is no language of a bill at this point. We will see what comes out of this public hearing and move from there.
Thank you very much for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Jay. Thank you.
That was great. And what I'm going to do is... You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS-FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. You can also check out past and future shows, archived in streaming MP3, and myriad relevant links at the website www.changesurfer.com.